morning, Chair.
Good morning, Jefferson.
Good morning.
I went to church and prayed for all of you.
Can I check, please, if we have apologies that have been registered? Honorable Paulson is already giving an indication.
Yes, sir, we do have apologies. Honorable Paulson is attending another meeting. Minister will join the meeting at 11. Mr. Paulson is, he will leave at 10. And then the Office of the Auditor General, they requested a postponement, so they will brief us later during the term.
Oh, so they are not coming?
They are not coming. Thank you.
Okay. That's fine. Welcome to yourself and the team from the department, from Parliament. The information I have is that the department in its entirety is here, led by the DG. There's about 9 DDGs here, 2 acting DDGs, 3 chief directors, 2 CFOs, 2 PLOs, who are quite many. If I was to go through all of that, it will show most of our time. But all of you are welcome. We hope you had a bit of a rest if you did have any. Let us then proceed. Can I have a mover of the adoption of the agenda?
Sorry, Chairperson.
Honorable Brian.
Sorry, Chairperson. Just very quickly, I have to step out of the meeting at about 12:30, but I'll rejoin the meeting by 1:00. So you're away.
Okay. I just noted.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Yeah,
it's Nkosi Dembe from Isimangaliso. Yes. Sorry, Chairperson, to interrupt. We would like to apologize for our CEO, Mr. Sibusiso Bukhosini. There's a situation that it happened to his family, so he won't be part of this meeting, but we do have the CFO to represent him. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Honorable Mtunu.
Yes, Honorable Chairperson, I just want to register that at 1:30, I'll start driving, so I might be in and out, but I'll make sure that I'm connected on the time. But where there is a network problem, I might have challenges. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Yako?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and honourable members. I am in attendance today, but I'm not feeling so great. I have Mr. Mashele, who's also part of our delegation. But I, depending on how I'm feeling, Chairperson, I might come in and out, but I'm going to endeavour to be here the whole meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mayor Nako. It's going to be a very long meeting, but that's fine. Are those the only apologies that we have? Okay, let's get into it then. Chilis, can we flag the second term program? No, we must get the adopter, the mover for the adoption.
Ruche.
Thank you very much, Honorable Winkler. Can we get the seconder?
A second chair, it's Ganjo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ganjo. It would seem the constituency period has... honorable members have forgotten to raise hands and just speak. I believe that we will adjust as the sun goes a bit half. Honorable members, slide by slide, today is the 18th of April. Jay Rodemeyer. Mr. Is Mr. Rodemeyer here?
Yes, I am, Chair.
Good. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you, sir.
And then that briefing by the Office of the Auditor General will have to be removed because they are requesting to come and present a bit later. Consideration and the adoption of the report on Snowfall Crowd. Consideration and the adoption of the second term committee program. A briefing on the APP and strategic plans of 2023-2024 financial year. Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment and MLRF. South African National Parks and East Mangalisa. Wednesday, tomorrow, again from 10:30 to 5, continuation of the briefings to be Source and Sunby.
Recording in progress.
This weekend from the 21st, we are presenting to the Eastern Cape for public consultations on climate change. On Tuesday the 2nd, consideration and adoption of the committee budget vote report. Briefing by the PGA. Chair, is it my right to assume that the members have interfaced with this document?
Yes, Chair, I did share it in our group.
So in the interest of time, can I just see if members want to add or subtract anything so that we don't go column by column? Honorable Paulson?
Are we dealing with the Snowflow style matter, correct?
You are correct, yes.
Chairperson? Yeah. So there's a part there that says that other members argue that homeless and landless people in the Western Cape of Africa should find land anywhere and occupy it. They said that the police must keep law and order and prevent evictions and those denying people the birthright of a place to stay. Now, Chairperson, in the main, I'm happy with the document, but I think, in fairness to the other members who may have a different feeling, I'd like it to be on record that it wasn't other members. It was the EFF that argued that homeless and landless people in the Western Cape and North Africa should find land anywhere and occupy it. So if that addition could be made to the document, I'm comfortable with it.
Okay. No, it's fine, Honorable Paulson. We will come to Knopfler Kraal. I thought you were removing it on the program for the...
Okay. No. The program I'm also fine with.
Okay. Let's just finalize the program. I thought you were removing it from the... And you were making an addition to that part. You want the report to just recognize that...
The
EFF.
Yeah.
That's fine. We'll get to it when we discuss the report.
Okay, Chair.
Okay, let's go down, please. It would seem we'll be seized with the climate change bill for the better part of the term. Is there anything that honorable members think that we might have left out?
Sorry, Chair, I'm not sure if the hands are coming up on your side. I saw Honourable Mkuna also had one up at one stage. I do have my hand up as well.
I can only see yours. Okay, now it's fine, Honourable Brian. Before you proceed, may I request Simon to switch his mic off? Simon, please switch your mic off. Okay, Honourable Brian, please proceed now.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, there's just two items that I would request that we put on the agenda if possible. The one is the long outstanding discussion around the animal welfare bill and the joint collaboration between the our committee and the DALRRD committee. We have had numerous previous meetings on that, but I think it would be important for us to get an update as to that collaboration between the two committees. So that would be on we'd need to invite DALRRD's committee to join that. That's the one request, Chair. And the other request is a report that we haven't received yet, which is on scientific activities in Antarctica. I know that the Minister did embark on a trip there a couple of months back, and for us to have a presentation on the existing activities from a scientific perspective taking place in Antarctica. Those are my requests for the two items for the agenda at some stage. They shouldn't take too much time, so I'm sure we could slot them in if possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Brian. If you allow us, can we just put them as footnotes for now? And then at the right time, we'll find the proper and suitable date and squeeze them in the agenda.
Perfect. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, the opportunity to make further input on the term of, on the program for the term. Honourable Ganjo.
Thank you, Chair. I think we need also to find space for Auditor General. We have agreed on their request to be to not present today's meeting. But however, we'll have to then try and feature them in on this program. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. We'll include that also as a footnote. Can we then move for the adoption with those footnotes? Those items, honourable members have proposed, will find a suitable date for them. But they should not come as surprises. They are part of this self-contempt program. The two matters raised by Honourable Brian and the matter of Honourable Ganjo. Can we then move? Can we get a mover? Honourable Mkunu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the program.
Thank you. Honourable Mkunu moves for the adoption with those additions. Honourable Winkler.
I second that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Winkler. Right. We now move, honourable members, to Honourable Mr. Rademeyer. Mr.
Whose phone is ringing? It's not mine.
Good morning, Mr. Rademeyer. Welcome to a meeting of the Portfolio Committee of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment. I want to, on behalf of this committee, thank you very much for having the courage to write a book on such a contentious issue that many people would shy away from publishing. One wonders whether your publication has infection, whether positive or negative, up to this end, and where such reactions might be coming from is a matter that needs to be thoroughly looked at. Secondly, I would like to think that while researching for your book, you might have came across experiences from other countries of what ultimately happens to protected areas subjected to this kind of things that you might have came across in the Kruger National Park. And I'm sure members of this committee would gladly like to hear from you of those experiences. Without further ado, I invite you to present to the Portfolio Committee of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment. Once again, welcome.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. It's a privilege to be here, and I greatly appreciate the invitation. I'd like to present on a report that was published earlier this year and the findings of that particular report. If you bear with me for 1 second, let me just get a PowerPoint up. Hope you can see that.
Yes, we can. The landscape of fear,
right.
Crime, and murder.
Thank you. All right, so just to briefly, before I get started, explain the alphabet soup to the right of the screen. I work for the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. It's a civil society organization which is based in Geneva, Switzerland. It's been in existence for around 10 years working on issues of organized crime around the world. We have around 100 staff in various observatories. I head up our East and Southern Africa Observatory. There are two other African observatories, one in West Africa, one in North Africa, and the Sahel. We're also supported by an expert group of around 500 people drawn from academia, law enforcement, judiciary, and the development worlds. And the global initiative on this particular project is partnered with the Institute of Security Studies and Interpol. That partnership sees the work done by the Enact Africa project. And the Enact Africa project is implemented by those groups to try and build knowledge and develop skills to enhance the continent's abilities to combat organized crime. And it's funded by the European Union, which has placed security in Africa high up on its agenda through its Pan-African program. So now that we've got that out of the way, let me move on to the presentation itself. We'll be speaking today a lot about crime, and I think that what I tried to do with this report, was to take a step back from the focus area around Kruger and poaching on Kruger. So much has been written over the years, by myself included, where there's been a very narrow focus on the Kruger National Park, the poaching that's occurring within the Kruger, issues around the so-called war on poaching. And I think that what we set out to do here was to take a step back, look at Mpumalanga holistically and look at some of the issues in Mpumalanga, a province that is uniquely situated in South Africa given its access to various borders, given the fact that it surrounds the southern part of the park and the so-called intensive protection zone where many of the park's last rhino populations are left. The first slide there is a slide that was taken, an image taken from an armed robbery at a business mall in Bushbuck Ridge, and you're probably wondering why I'm putting that up, but I think that it exemplifies in many ways the challenges that we're dealing with in Mpumalanga, but also the challenges that we're dealing with in organized crime more broadly in South Africa. This was an incident in February this year. The police issued a press statement the following day saying that there'd been an incident in which a number of suspects had caused a stir during a business robbery at the Dwarsloot Mall in Bushbuck Ridge. It was only a few paragraphs down that you learned that there were 30 armed suspects carrying handguns and rifles who stormed the mall in the early hours of the morning, used explosives to gain access to cash and safes, blew up ATM machines, attacked a casino and blew up slot machines in that casino, raided a Pep home store and a Pep clothing store, raided a liquor store and a cell phone store, and made off. The police station in that area is 7 kilometers away from where this incident occurred. Keep that long view of crime. And I think that the most important aspect here, and this is looking at South Africa, and this is extracted, by the way, from our strategic organized crime assessment on South Africa, which I've made available to the committee, along with the report that I'm speaking about. We've always had high levels of violence in South Africa. But what's important to note here is that our first democratic elections in 1994 saw a dramatic reduction in murder rates. Some of that can be attributed to the so-called peace dividend in the moments after the election, as some of the violence that had been raging for a number of years across the country dissipated, but also the implementation of things like the Firearms Control Act, which was at the time you had a high-functioning central firearms registry, et cetera, et cetera. That saw nearly 50% decline in murder. And we use murder because it's an accurate way of assessing levels of violence within a society. Around 2011-12, we began to see an uptick in those figures across the country, and then a 38% increase in murder rates across South Africa in 10 years. It's closer to a 40% increase by now. Much of that's been attributed to law enforcement institutional weaknesses. There's also an increase in vigilante action in many communities that are grappling with organized crime and issues around armed robbery, and where all too often law enforcement is absent or ineffective. And it's also key in terms of things like violent robbery, but as I'll mention later, issues around cash and transit heists, ATM bombings, and so on and so forth. Now, what sets Mpumalanga apart in some ways is that it is one of the few rural provinces that has...
Mr. Rademeyer?
Yes. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes,
we can hear you. I think it might be an issue with the chairperson's signal.
Okay. I'll just pause for a second there. Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
We can hear you, Mr. Rademeyer.
Okay, in the interest of time, I'll continue. Thank you, ma'am. So if we look at Mpumalanga, it's in a fairly unique position among provinces in South Africa, where it's seen a 42% increase in murder rates over 10 years. That, as you can see, Gauteng, which has particularly high rates in violent crime, has also seen a 42% increase over that period. And those provinces of the Western Cape, 46%, and KwaZulu-Natal are the two highest, which is quite worrying if you consider that, you know, Mpumalanga is in that cluster of provinces with such high levels of violent crime. But another aspect which is very important to mention, and this slide is quite convoluted, I'm not going to go into too much detail, other than to emphasize that South Africa is in a unique position among African countries. And this is measured in an organized crime index, which we produce globally every 2 years, and an Africa index, which we produce together with the Enact project, where we try to measure levels of organized crime across countries, but we also try to measure the levels of resilience within those countries. What this research shows, and you can have a look at the document itself, is that South Africa is in a unique position. While our resilience is growing increasingly fragile, we still have comparatively high levels of resilience compared to most African countries, but we also have extremely high levels of criminality. And what our organized crime strategic assessment shows is that South Africa certainly has globally one of the most diverse and interconnected criminal markets, where you have a range of activities from sort of mafia-style groups to issues around smuggling of arms, human trafficking, human smuggling, our linkages into the international drugs trade, and obviously issues around wildlife crime. Within that context, the Kruger, and that's the study area of this report in the map on the right there, from Acorn Hook down and then across to Komatipoort with some extension into the Barberton area. The Kruger figure exists in what we've termed a landscape of fear, and we argue that the gravest threat facing the Kruger National Park and the greater Kruger area today is not poaching but internal corruption. But it's important not to just focus only on the corruption, it's the drivers of corruption that we need to look at, and I'll come back to those, but also the criminal networks that have become entrenched in and around that area over the years. And much of that has to do with the issues around law enforcement that I highlighted earlier. So the Kruger is not some kind of insulated wildlife paradise, and I think all of you on this call know that. But I think that for many people out there, it fits that mold. And the struggles that it's dealing with mirror South Africa's broader struggles with organized crime. The Kruger exists in a rapidly urbanizing landscape where criminal economies, violent local and transnational networks are embedded and evolving. You can see that with kidnapping networks, cash and transit heists, drug trafficking that transit through there, human smuggling, ATM bombings. We've seen an uptick in assassinations, which I'll come back to. A deep-seated inequality, and I'll touch on that in a bit more detail. And crime and corruption have a profound impact on the greater Kruger region and the people who live in it and around the park. And that includes the Kruger National Park, the Kruger staff. The Kruger employs around 2,500 staff. It supports around 4,500 jobs in communities around the park. There are 400 field rangers. 86% of them live in villages and towns around the park. And they're particularly vulnerable in that way because they're aside from the risks that they face within the park in trying to deal with poaching and other issues related to that, when they go home, they're also vulnerable to approaches from criminal networks. And there are very few places for people to turn. If you spent your 23 days on, you head home, you have criminal networks making direct approaches, and sometimes, not even subtle approaches, saying, for instance, when you're not here and you're working in the park, we know where your children go to school. We know where your wife is. And putting immense pressure on people. We've seen that organized crime certainly poses an existential threat to communities in that area, and that's particularly related to the violence. And we come back to the murder rate. But we've also seen worrying issues, for instance, the murder of a German tourist at Numbi Gate, the subsequent shootings of two security guards who were put in position there to keep an eye on that entrance. We've seen the murder of Anton Mzimba, the head ranger Tumbavati, whose murder has yet to be resolved, despite the fact that there are leads on suspects. We've seen the murder of Colonel Leroy Brevard, who was assassinated while investigating rhino poaching networks in the Kruger National Park. Again, no one has been no one has been tried for that crime. And we've seen other murders more recently. I mentioned the case of Chief Clyde Amnesi, who was implicated in involvement in networks involved in poaching and organized crime around the Kruger National Park. And the subsequent assassination, it seems to be an internal family dispute, but the subsequent assassination murder of his widow. So all of those complexities come together. So if we look at this issue, and I've turned it a governance void, where you have a growing community living in and around the Kruger National Park. You have around 2.9 million people within 50 kilometers of the Kruger's boundary fence, according to stats say in 2019. That figure is probably likely closer to 4 million today. Average unemployment is around 46%. In research that's been done around the park, the Kruger's aesthetic beauty, while it might appeal to tourists, has very little relevance to communities living around that park and living in conditions where they are struggling. The Kruger itself is struggling with a historic legacy that molded over a century. We can go back to the impact of Afrikaner nationalism, apartheid, forced removals around there, structural racism, which continues to bedevil efforts to try and remold and restructure the park. Sanparks has worked hard in trying to attract black South African tourists to the park, but the simple fact remains that black South Africans make up 28% of all Sanparks guests, and they only make up around 12% of overnight guests in that park. Poverty, inequality, unemployment are key drivers of crime. We've seen areas, again, as I say, where there's an absence of law enforcement, either because law enforcement is disinterested, too corrupt, or too inefficient, where there's an absence of real change in communities, and that has an impact, and it allows for criminal networks to entrench themselves, but it also allows for parallel illicit economies to grow and metastasize. And there's also instances where communities have been tarred as poachers, where they are subject to heavy-handed anti-poaching operations, which itself has led to deeper divisions. If we look at the impact, and I won't go into this in too much detail, but between 2011 and 2020, the Kruger's white rhino population fell by 75%. What we've seen in the Kruger is this low-level, seemingly unending so-called war on poaching, as it's all too often erroneously termed. But if you look at it within that context, this is a 15-year low-level conflict. This is as long as the wars of independence in Angola and Mozambique, the Bush War in Rhodesia, or the Lebanese Civil War. The military strategy has been largely unsuccessful. We've seen declining populations. We've seen continued poaching. It's come at enormous psychological and physical impact. There's been a severe breakdown in trust, staff cohesion, and professionalism within the park as a result. You know, for instance, when you're seeing millions being spent on this nebulous war on poaching, and yet the facilities in which rangers have to live are not being improved, that has a significant impact on morale. There are well-founded fears that there are significantly high levels of corruption within the park. Some people speculate around 40% of the staff may be involved in some way, either by assisting syndicates with information or more directly, smuggling weapons into the park, that kind of thing. We know that in one section of the park, at least 14 out of 20 rangers have been implicated in corruption. A financial investigation and an impressive financial investigation, which has been done by DPCI, supported by KPMG, the auditing firm, through donor funding, bringing in Sandparks and Kruger investigators, plus also bringing in the NPA, has identified around 50 suspects so far. And it's an investigation which unfortunately at the moment doesn't have funding to continue, but it has resulted in 16 arrests, and those 16 arrests have had an almost overnight impact in driving down poaching. In one particular area of the park where some of the early arrests took place, there was not a poaching incident for 3 months. I think it's fair to say, and certainly we make this point in the report, that there is a refreshing openness within the Kruger, but also within Sandparks, to speak out about issues that they are confronting with corruption. There are efforts underway to try and root out corruption and most importantly to rebuild fractured relationships within the park. But it's something that is going to take a very, very long time, and it's going to take a degree of commitment. I'll come a lot back to that further. If you look at it, and we've termed this the Wild East, it's a statement taken from a book about organized crime in Mpumalanga. Mpumalanga's violence and its geographic position set it apart. As I mentioned earlier, its position in relation to Mozambique and Eswatini. We've mentioned the various types of crimes that are occurring increasingly often there. There are criminal syndicates with tentacles that extend to a range of markets. It's not a case where you have syndicates involved in rhino poaching only, but you have syndicates with linkages into cash and transit heists, the taxi industry, other forms of violence. The late Chief Clyde Mbisi is a good example of that. It's believed his assassination was linked to a dispute over the spoils from a cash and transit heist. He also was involved in the taxi industry. And he he was arrested and was due to go on trial this month on charges linked to an extensive rhino poaching syndicate, which also involved Petros Sidney Mabuza, a significant crime boss, better known by his clan name of Shengu. He was assassinated in June 2021. That's his vehicle, the orange pickup truck there. Another figure in that syndicate is Joseph Nyalunga on the bottom right, a former police officer. And there are a number of former police officers who've been implicated in this case, five of them, including the former station commissioner from Skukuza. So that gives gives you in a snapshot a fairly a good idea of how these syndicates operate and how they traverse different markets. Corruption remains a key enabler of all of this activity. And I've spoken earlier about some of the assassinations, and Mpumalanga, certainly in our most recent report documenting assassinations in South Africa, has seen alarming upticks in assassinations related to organized crime, but also politically. We come to responses, second last slide. We've looked at this, and this does not only apply to the Kruger and the Greater Kruger area, but I think in many approaches to organized crime in South Africa. Policing tactics have, for the most part, been reactive and need to be replaced. We need much more strategic approaches, targeted investigations. The investigation, for instance, that was done by DPCI and Mpumalanga, coupled with the NPA, SANParks, and KPMG, is one example of that. And the impact of that investigation, and hopefully we'll go forward and see convictions coming from there, has been incredibly encouraging. Targeted investigations identifying high-level actors in the markets that cause the greatest harms. We've seen, for instance, a good example is the case of Big Joe Nyalunga, who's allegedly one of the key figures linked to a significant network, poaching network, where action, and he's been arrested three times in connection with poaching cases and has also been arrested in connection with a murder, where action has been taken not only through prosecutions that are coming up now, but also where the South African Revenue Service has become involved and hit him with a tax bill, a significant tax bill, plus most of his assets have been seized. So coupling asset forfeiture with tax investigations and others. It's necessary to build up critical financial investigations and intelligence functions within SAPS, but also strategically within DPCI. DPCI have demonstrated in the province that they can make inroads into organized crime. We've seen that with some of the investigations into cash and transit heists, but also more recently with the Kruger investigations. Prosecutions of high-level actors and speedy prosecution. And then, very importantly, within the park, rebuilding morale, rebuilding professionalism and trust among staff and rangers, providing protections for whistleblowers, investigators, and prosecutors. And I think that with the current leadership in the Kruger, there are efforts underway to do that. But that is going to require a long-term commitment from political leadership, from SANParks and its board, to address those issues in a way that's transparent and fair, swift and consistent. It's also vital, and there again moves underfoot within Kruger to do this, to implement a transparent and fair integrity management policy. And that is an integrity management policy that goes far beyond simply doing polygraphing with all the attendant controversy around that. And importantly, rebuilding a sense of professionalism, trust, and motivation by embedding core values at both the leadership level, but also among staff. I think it's important that this is not something that's seen to be targeting staff only, but that it's something that works across the park and leadership are bound to the same levels and are bound to the same processes. There's a need to improve internal communications and to provide ways for staff, particularly rangers, to speak out about some of the challenges they're facing. I've mentioned strategy, the possibility of amnesties for low-level actors, again, a controversial idea, but one that should at least be explored, and then creating safe spaces and an independent whistleblowing mechanism. I think that is probably the greatest challenge, and it's the one that is going to require the most thought, particularly when you have situations where your staff are vulnerable within the park, but also outside the park, where you have cases, for example, where you have criminal networks who double as loan sharking or double, you know, as loan sharks involved in a range of criminal of activities, which can give them access to people's financial information through loans, cash loans, and that also pinpoints weaknesses. So I think there are a number of areas where there can be significant improvements made. I think in many ways the greatest weakness currently in the province is policing within many of the communities that are impacted and the absence of police. And the police themselves in some of those communities face the same challenges as SANParks Ranger Corps, where they are exposed They live in communities with Almanza police. They're exposed to entrenched organized crime networks and syndicates. So ultimately, the takeaway for me from this particular research, and as I've said earlier, the report has been circulated, is that there is only so much that can be done within the Kruger Park, and I think that there are commendable efforts underway at the moment. Hopefully we'll see positive results coming from those. But there is an urgent need to address the far more broad issue of organized crime within the Kruger, which stretches from Barberton and the mines of Barberton, and the linkages between those networks. And it's not something that only the DPCI or the NPA can tackle. It's something that is going to require an all-of-government commitment. It requires issues around the socioeconomic conditions in the province to be addressed urgently, and then a broader involvement from law enforcement agencies. I thank you. If there are any questions at this point.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rady Mayor. Thank you very much for a comprehensive report. Honorable members, can I invite you to engage the presentation of Mr. Rady Mayor? I note the hand of Honorable Weber. I also note the hand of Honorable Bryant. Please proceed, Honorable Weber. We'll see if there are other hands that may come a bit later.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Rademeyer, for an excellent report. I think we all are a little bit shocked and maybe, well, not shocked, I'm not shocked, but paralyzed by the information due to the fact that we do not have proper enforcement of dealing with these issues. You just mentioned now from the mines in Barberton right through. Now, I live in Mpumalanga. So one of the big issues in Barberton town in itself is corrupt not only by these wildlife but also by the mines, which no one can do anything about. So it's like you said, a parallel, I'm not sure you called it a parallel, but it is a parallel, so like a shadow mining companies. They do exactly what the legal one do, they just parallel to them, and this is exactly what is happening. You mentioned that there was a fall of 75% of runaways in the Kruger National Park. So this is a very interesting question I'm going to ask, which I'm not sure you can answer, but what is the real figure of existing runaways in the Kruger? It is also scary to see, and I understand it, if someone comes to you and says they're going to kill your wife or your child, they do that to a policeman and to a ranger, which really cares. They really don't really have anywhere to go, because they must go to a policeman that they thought that is on their side, and they're not, and they do lose of this. What can really be done about that? I saw you said that there's 16 people arrested. My problem is, you said there's also no funding. Who's responsible for the funding if you're going to a court case, and is it the investigation that needs to be done by the police that this needs funded? Why is there no funding for this investigation so we can actually have some serious convictions here? I think one of the big problems here is also the crossover from provinces. Because in Skukuza Court, I quite often go to that, and that is my other question. You mentioned that the station commander has also been arrested or being implicated. We said with Skukuza Court that it's mostly in the Bushbuck Reach area, exactly where you had this mass people going in and blew up everything. So Skukuza Court is there. If the station commander is implicated and the Skukuza Court takes place in Skukuza, how fair can these outcomes be? I've attended some of them. I've seen some be arrested. I see some people really just, they just walk out. And because the system of the cross-border, someone that has been implicated twice or three arrested in KZN and they come over to Kruger National Park in Mpumalanga, there's no reference from that situation and they walk through here as a first-timer. How can we maybe better that situation between all of the provincial environmental people. Then just my last question, I think, let me just make sure. No, I think for now that is it. Thank you. Just my last question. When you speak about the socioeconomic conditions and is it that you mean about the inequality and the poverty of people and therefore they're vulnerable to the syndicate crime, to the crime syndicates in the sense of they will do anything to sort of get money in betraying what is happening there? Then my question, if that is what you mean, is how can you lift up to this socioeconomic problems if the country has such a high rate of poverty and unemployment, and one of the reasons we're there is because of this syndicate crime and the corruption that we have in the country? Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, should I answer those questions quickly? Or?
Jefferson, are you there? I think we normally, I think the chair's dropped off again. We normally take a couple, so I'll take the liberty, I think, in the meantime, of just following on. Thank you again, Mr. Rademeyer, just to echo the sentiments of my colleague, Honourable Weber. Very, very interesting presentation, and I think it's sort of a missing piece of the puzzle in terms of many of the presentations that we've had up until now, really speaking to some of those key endemic issues in terms of, you know, what's feeding this broader network of crime in the Mpumalanga area. We have been up ourselves as a committee to visit Kruger, and some of the things that you've mentioned, I think, are quite pertinent in terms of our own oversight operations up there. One question that I would like to ask, we've heard recently reports in particular around load shedding and Eskom. There was a report, I think it was in the Daily Maverick, speaking around the connections with the coal mafia in Mpumalanga, and spoke to similar networks, including Cash and Transit, and I think they mentioned Rhino Horn as well, and the connections with Mr. Mabuza. I'm talking about Mr. Big Mabuza, the other one, the gent who was assassinated. How much of a link is there between what's taking place with the coal mafia in that area and important political figures and I know certain police individuals were implicated as well in some of those reports. How much of a connection is there between that coal mafia and the issues relating to rhino horn smuggling and the poaching? Then in terms, you mentioned there were issues with what you refer to as heavy-handed anti-poaching operations. Can you just expand a little bit on what you're referring to there? In terms of the range of facilities and, you know, how we could be improving those with some of the money that's being spent on the war, but fully agree with you. I mean, we were up there, as I mentioned, on that oversight, and I know many of the members were quite shocked to see some of the conditions that some of the rangers were staying in. It was good to see that there was some of them were being upgraded, but there's still a long way to go. And, you know, I don't think anybody wants to be spending this money. That said, we are still sitting with 82 vacant ranger posts at Kruger National Park. Only 5 of them have been managed to be filled by Sandbox over the past year. And there's still another 82 that need to be filled, and they need budget and all of that as well. So that is a challenge, and obviously where would you house them with the current issues they're facing? Where can we get that report that you mentioned from USA and WWF? Is that available online? Or if it's not, is it something that could be circulated to the committee? Is it a confidential report? If you just expand on that. I think you've made the point quite clear in terms of the breakdown of trust between Sandparks and Kruger National Park and staff, etc. I know it's something that which we've raised on a regular basis. We sometimes met with a, you know, oh, don't worry, everything's okay, we're working on it. But I think there is blatant it's been raised when we've spoken previously around polygraph testing or integrity testing, and trying to find ways to get that balance correct between treating everybody like a criminal, but recognizing the fact that there is endemic corruption taking place in Kruger National Park. And I think that balance is important. And I think following on from that, what you mentioned, your responses, which I think could probably be better summed up as recommendations at the end of your report, have you made those formally to any members of Sandparks, the board, or any of the staff? And if so, what has the response been in terms of those recommendations? And the final point is, you've mentioned your work with ISS and Interpol. How much work is being undertaken in terms of the end point of a lot of this rhino horn, the vast majority of it going to China, and the connection between our local smuggling syndicate and the Chinese buyers and the Chinese criminal syndicates that are operating and functioning, and what more, in your opinion, could be done by the South African government and Sandbox and our police to address that? Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Honorable Brian, Honorable Ganjo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will request that I switch off my video because I've just experienced load shedding started now at 10 for the connectivity. I would like to switch off my video. Just 2 points from the report by Mr. Rademeyer. Let me appreciate the report. And one, he has mentioned some of the allegations about the employees of Sandparks or Kruger National Park were involved in these crimes. I want to check if there are concrete evidence, and also if those allegations have been reported to the police and they have been charged. And secondly, it is clear here that we are not just dealing with the killing of animals and so on and so forth, but you are dealing with a syndicate. We are dealing with organized crime that deals with drugs, as he has already mentioned, human trafficking and all that, that. So for me, I think it is not only us as the FFE that needs to deal with this matter. We need, or Sandparks, we need to rope in the safety and security class so that we can all work together in trying to resolve this matter. So I would propose that as this committee, we at some point we have to call Minister Bele and the portfolio committee that deals with safety and security cluster to come, and we afford also Mr. Rademeyer an opportunity to present this so that we can hear from the side of the police what is it that they are doing in trying to assist the challenges that are faced by Mpumalanga and the community at large. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Siyabulela, Honorable Kancho, Honorable Mbatha.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Julian. I think you have been touched on the local strategies, community safety, like your CPF, the street committees, if there are street committees, because it's a rural area, on how best this can be controlled, and what other assistance. Because let me just give a reference on where I'm staying. We have a lot of crime, but what we do, we did as a community. We decided to get one security company where all the community members agreed to use that security company. and each house they pop about 335. So for all the crime, because it was we had the highest crime, for all the crime here, whether there's deliveries and so forth, these security companies, they are accompanying those people, and they have the cameras also for surveillance around the street. And we've got the street committees which hold their own meetings with the relevant security company. So for that, we have seen that our crime has gone down, because there was housebreaking. Kids couldn't go even to the shops. So I'm just giving some of those information to say, maybe you should also check on making sure that the community buy in and they pop out to assist, because sometimes the police, they are not available 24/7, but this security company is available 24/7. They've got the surveillance cameras in all the streets where in our area, because we tried our level best to try and reduce or resolve the issue of crime, and it has an impact now. And we have so many cases where we have, as the community, we have found ourselves the culprits. Then after, by the assistant of the security company, and we have handed them over to the local police station. I know it's a difficult situation, but please try and look at those smallanyana issues. That means that the community is buying in now, so it will assist a lot. Thank you.
Siyabonga Mhlonipheki Mbatha. Honorable members, the further takers. Okay. Mr. Rademeyer, just from my side, I'm sure you'd agree with me that the triple challenges of poverty, inequality, and unemployment are significant contributors and drivers of crime, and this should include in those national parks. Now, in terms of your research and everywhere else you have been, how do these other national parks survive in other countries? Just for example, here next to us in Zimbabwe, how do they survive? Or is it safe to conclude that we are the only country that is poor? It will be very helpful for us to copy the working modalities and the methodologies that they are deploying there. But lastly, the recommendations that you are making to deal with this crime, in line with what Honorable Kanjo has proposed, have you shared them with the law enforcement agencies, particularly the South African Police Services, to enhance their effectiveness? If you have, what has been their response before we really intervene as a committee to invite the minister and the leadership of South African Police Services? Over to you, Mr. Rademeyer.
All right, thank you, Chair. Let me start just quickly with that question. We did share the report. In fact, it was launched in White River at a closed event attended by DPCI from the province, Stanparks, and the NPA, along with other stakeholders. We've also shared, and I think it overlaps quite a bit with this report, the strategic organized crime assessment that we've done at a national level with the Cyber Police Service, DPCI, and also the relevant ministers in the justice cluster, the NPA as well. This particular report hasn't been shared nationally, but I think that many of the points that we're making in terms of strategic I think that there is certainly scope for a further discussion about that. I think when it comes to other national parks, it's extremely difficult. Zimbabwe, you mentioned Zimbabwe. Yes, Zimbabwe has been showing some success, but their national parks have also been under enormous pressure over the years, you know, facing long before South Africa's poaching crisis began, Zimbabwe itself was facing an onslaught on national parks. And that's ebbed and waned over the years. I think that the distinct characteristic that possibly sets a society, certainly in Southern Africa, not so much in Central and other parts of Africa, but in Southern Africa, is the levels of violence that exist in our society and the levels of violent crime that exist in our society. You know, the assassinations that take place. Not a week goes by without another assassination being reported. I mentioned the upticks in Mpumalanga and elsewhere. And I think that is what's really worrying, is that these syndicates, you know, you're looking at cash in transit gangs, you're looking at illegal miners in the Barberton area, you're looking at people involved in a range of criminal activities and very violent criminal activities, have entrenched themselves and have metastasized. And you have these almost parallel economies that have become established, where the people that you turn to in some communities are not necessarily the state, the support. But you, you know, if you need a loan, if you need support, you turn to the gang bosses. If you need security, if you need protection of your business. And that's really worrying. You know, we've seen that in other provinces too, the Western Cape around, you know, with the gang economies. So I think that, you know, that's for us, that is something of very real concern, particularly in a province like Mpumalanga, where you've had this increase in murder rates over the past decade. If I may, moving on to some of the other questions, and I'll try and answer these as quickly as possible. Honourable Weber referred to Barberton and what could be done in Barberton. Certainly, you can see the economic impact of illegal mining and organised crime on the community there. The mines around Barberton have had some success, though, by bringing in external police investigators, both DPCI and also the police task team and other agencies from other provinces to conduct investigations. And that has led to a significant dip in illegal mining in those communities, and particularly in areas where there are allegations of significant local police corruption and police aiding and abetting illegal miners. The Skukuza court, just to clarify, the person who was arrested was briefly the station commissioner at Skukuza, and then was subsequently moved. I speak under correction, but I think it was to Bushbuck Ridge, and that's when the arrest took place. But certainly, you know, I think we've seen efforts in the past to close down the Skukuza court. Thankfully, that didn't happen. I think the Skukuza court itself has a high level of convictions that have taken place and dedicated prosecutors who are working there. I think that when the challenge, and this dovetails with some of the other comments from Honourable Bryant, but I think, you know, the challenge is where do you invest your money? I think it's quite crucial within Kruger to look at the conditions in which rangers operate. I think that a lot of the breakdown in trust, a lot of what can be attributed to the general collapse of morale within the park can be attributed to the conditions in which rangers work. There are accusations of racism that have been leveled by some rangers. There certainly is, you know, if you look at from a perspective of sort of spatial apartheid, very little has changed in the way that structures run within Kruger. And I think there are now efforts to try and relook at those, to also look at to carry out benchmarking operations, to look at salaries and employment scales. So that's slightly important. The socioeconomic conditions, and this also touches on what the Honourable Chairperson was saying now, yes, the high rates of poverty do play into that, but we also know that, you know, they're, just because people are poor doesn't make them criminals. And I think the vast majority of people in those communities are not involved in criminal activity. The problem, though, is that you do have a subset, and it's a powerful subset with access to weapons. You can install fear in communities where there's very little option. You know, who do you turn to in a community when your local police station has been corrupted, when you can't rely on police reacting to those issues, and where you're not seeing any real impact when arrests do take place or prosecutions take place or when investigations take place. Honourable Bryant mentioned Eskom, load shedding, and links to the coal mafia. In our experience, and certainly there are some indications of some elements from that are involved in the coal mafia, also involved in other organized crime, from cash and transit heists, some linkages to rhino horn trafficking networks, poaching networks. But we tend to look at organized crime ecosystems within South Africa, and the argument that we make in our strategic organized crime risk assessment is that there are multiple overlapping criminal ecosystems. And it's not a case of people working these days primarily in one sort of illicit economy. For example, you'll have, Barberton's a good example, where there was a crackdown on illegal mining, but where similarly with the decline in poaching levels in the south of the Kruger National Park, some poachers have turned to providing protection for illegal miners. There was an incident when I was doing research where a hunting rifle was used to fire shots at mine security, and there was some suspicion that that rifle may have emanated from poachers. So these are constantly shifting illicit markets and new opportunities. You know, if you stop one axis of illicit income, people still need to earn an income. There's also a couple of questions here around the vacant posts within Sandparks. There is a strong argument to be made that currently is probably not the right time to be filling posts in Sandparks until there's some stability. Certainly some of the subjects that I interviewed described the current working environment as toxic, and that employing staff at this particular time before efforts to address that can gain ground would itself be self-defeating. Certainly, I think, again, one needs to again look at the conditions in which rangers work. You yourselves have visited the park and seen that, and how that can be addressed. The USAID report is an internal report that was done for Sandparks with support from WWF. The report, the recommendations in our report have been shared widely with Sandparks and with the Kruger National Park. I believe that they have also been shared at board level. Just moving on, I'm hopefully not missing too many questions here. Honourable Gunshaw asked if there's concrete evidence. Certainly in the investigation where there have been 16 arrests done, the prima facie evidence seems quite overwhelming in terms of linkages, payments made to corrupt actors within the park by criminal networks, bank accounts set up in the names of family members or in the names of children, shelf companies. There's a lot that's been unraveled there, and certainly with the early arrests that took place and that overnight decline in poaching, where it dropped from fairly high levels to no incidents in 3 months, show that these kinds of operations can have an impact. I think DPCI have been very involved in that process, and I think DPCI and the province have been very involved and collaborative with Sandparks and with the Kruger National Park and working on investigations, along with the police stock theft unit. And the SAP stock theft unit based within Kruger has also been very effective. But I think there's a lot more that needs to be done in communities around the Kruger, where we've seen this metastasizing of organized crime and other issues. Honorable Mbata raised a very important point around street committees and security companies and communities taking on their own levels of security and addressing those. And I think that certainly is a vital component, particularly in areas where you have an absence of law enforcement. But there is also only so much that can be done. We've seen cases, for instance, where street committees are intimidated, where you do have violent criminal networks that are entrenched, and they themselves, in many cases, might not have the same protections as you could have if you had a dedicated law enforcement focus on targeted investigations, looking into the networks that are terrorizing communities.
do think that that is an important component. Important component everywhere in South Africa, where people, you know, have the ability to do that. Certainly, not all communities can afford cameras and security guards on patrol. And that in itself raises the challenge and helps to deepen inequalities in many cases in South Africa. I'm not sure if I've missed any other questions that were asked, Honourable Chair, but if I have left you on, I'll please feel free to shout.
Honourable Brian, followed by Honourable Zamin.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry, there was just one or two things that I think just requiring a response on. Just the first one, I see you mentioned that USAID reported an internal report. I'm assuming that means that it is confidential and won't be able to share that. If you can just confirm that. And then the one question that I did ask was in terms of Interpol's involvement and your dealings in terms of feedback with regards to the Chinese markets and the Chinese smuggling syndicates and how that feeds in. And then just again on that point of the coal mafia, I mean, have you found or has there been any inference of the involvement of senior political figures in the horn trade in the same way as has been alleged with the coal mafia? It is sad to hear. Secondly, in terms of this toxic work environment you mentioned at KMP, it is something we have heard previously, and that needs to be addressed. And then just, Chairperson, perhaps as an aside, I know Sandbox is on the meeting. I wonder if they would want to make a response after Mr. Rademacher to some of the issues that have been raised. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Brian. Honourable Damien.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I just want to make some follow-up if probably they were not mentioned. One, I don't see the analysis about the stealing of cars, because what actually happened of stealing of vehicles, what actually happened now is that now there's a lot of these chop shops, in particular of selling the parts. To me, I think it is increasing because they are able to see that now the transportation of the full vehicles, therefore, is costly for them. Now they are dealing with now with this thing of chop shops, where actually now they are selling directly the parts. So if maybe we can be able to get that kind of now of the analysis. The second one, on the health sector, these bogus doctors that are taking place in doing operations to human bodies and all that, stealing the organs. But now to some of other areas, you'll find that now they will rush on a question and they are working closely with the people on mortuaries where actually they steal this kind of an organ. Because some of other people now, they don't want to do any post-mortem based on the thing that the organs are being stolen. The last point that is disturbing me a little bit, Chair, under organized corruption, I'm not sure it's deliberate or it is not deliberate. Why is mentioned when we speak about corruption? We speak about one person, the leader, and you even mentioned that Jacob Zuma. Is it not okay? Just simple say, corruption under the state capture, this is what actually happened. That now to single a person and by the name and say in fact now the person under this leadership of this person, as if in fact now corruption started from his era. It didn't happen to any other things. I find it very much disturbing to me that now we can't be able to do and demoralize or demonic any person who's doing that kind of thing. Therefore, I'm appealing to say that now this presentation, it should not be able to be personal. It should be able to be an overview that will be able to take place and make sure that now we talk about things that are happening, not just to personalize it to any certain individual. It was going to be enough for me to say, under the state of corruption, state capture report or whatever it is, therefore you speak about it. But the name of people and not have been mentioned on that state of report. But now, once you single it out, I find it very, very bad and disturbing to me. Thank you very much.
you, Chair, and thank you to Mr. Rademeyer. I'd like to know, has there been any response by SANParks and the department with regard to the report? Because I assume that this was sent to the various applicable authorities. And has there been any consultation with yourself and these agencies on how we can collaborate in terms of the information that you've brought forward and proposed solutions, and where the department and SANParks has been willing to take these recommendations on board and perhaps draft some sort of plan, a management plan to deal with this endemic corruption and the numerous other issues that you have highlighted in the report. Thank you.
Mr. Rademeyer.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. All right, so let me just begin with Honourable Bryant. Yes, the report is confidential. So I think any inquiries might probably best directed to SANParks. With regard to the Chinese market, we, under this project, haven't recently done work. I've done quite extensive work myself over the past 10 years looking at linkages between rhino horn trafficking in Africa and also in Asia, notably Vietnam and China. I would say that from the that, you know, much of the market these days seems to be in China. Certainly, there have been some efforts to do investigations. I think there's a lot more that could be done there. There has been some encouraging signs in recent years, although disrupted somewhat by the pandemic, of collaboration between South African and other law enforcement agencies and counterparts in the People's Republic of China. You've also asked if high-level political officials are implicated in rhino poaching. There are many allegations that do the rounds. Hard evidence is hard to come by. You know, there have been suggestions of some political figures at a more lower level who are implicated in that. I think it's a tricky one to assess, particularly given the climate that one sees in a province like Mpumalanga, where you do have, you know, for instance, an investigator in a significant rhino poaching case being assassinated. There is, you know, a climate of fear to some degree, and I think that there's a reluctance to probe too deeply very often when it comes to powerful figures. So, you know, that in itself. So I think, you know, when it comes to a comparison with the coal mafia and those linkages, you know, probably not quite on the same level. If we move on, Honourable Dlamini, you mentioned the theft of cars and chop shops, certainly also an issue in that province and the movement of cars across borders. One of the people allegedly involved in a network that we profile in the report and who is due to stand trial soon, a former police officer, was also implicated in moving stolen vehicles across the border, which allegedly was the reason for his leaving the police. We've also seen cases with vehicles moving, and I'm sure you're aware of these, of vehicles being moved across the border through Eswatini. I unfortunately know very little about organ theft cases and bogus doctors, so I'd be the wrong person to comment on that. I think your concern, certainly the question around naming people, I take what you mean there, and I think that certainly what the report tries to show is that issues that we're dealing with corruption in Mpumalanga long predate the province even coming into existence. There's a section in the report which tries to trace to some degree the history and the challenges that Mpumalanga faces in the province, and how, you know, some of the issues around corruption that the province is still wrestling with today and the roots of that corruption predate the formation of Mpumalanga in 1994 and date back to apartheid homelands and other linkages and issues around the homeland police and so on and so forth. So I would refer you to that section of the report. I think that where we have also identified people by name in terms of criminal networks that have involved, I think that has been necessary in this report to try and extend, to demonstrate the reach and the impact also that political figures have and issues that have occurred on their watch on the growth and the spread of organized crime and issues around law enforcement capacity to deal with that. Honorable Winkler, we have discussed the report with officials in the Kruger National Park. Certainly SANParks issued a statement following the release of the report saying that they welcome the findings of the report and the recommendations. And, you know, in my experience, I've seen a willingness, certainly a very encouraging willingness on the part of SANParks to discuss these issues far more openly than in the past, and a willingness to try and deal with them. Obviously, it's an enormous challenge, and it's something that is going to require political support for the people who are trying to effect change and trying to turn things around. Not sure if there's anything I've left out there, Honourable Chair.
Honourable Winkler, is that the legacy end?
Yes, apologies.
Honourable Zamin.
Chair, I still want to insist. The report says that now, even before 1994 and prior to 1994, therefore a lot of corruption has taken place. Now, but the report is only mentioning one person. Therefore, I'll say without a debate and all these other issues, I'll say, let's remove the name of any individuals that are there and speak about the report. Once now you start to zoom into any individuals as well, there are no facts that are taking place around them. It's just a question of insinuation to say it happened and all that. It's going to create problems to some of us. In particular, where actually you find that now, there is no evidence so far up to now. Therefore, I would say, yes, the report is good, but let's not mention the names of the people. Let's just talk about the report and its content than now to say there is this kind of report. If you check how many administrations did we have? We have the Mandela administration, we have the Thabo Mbeki's administration, we have the Zuma administration, we have Motlanthe's administration, we have the Ramaphosa administration now that is still on. But I don't think it is fair. Therefore, I am appealing. Let's not use the names of the people in any report like this. Thank you.
Honorable Brian.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I think we obviously wouldn't be able to amend Mr. Rodimer as a report. It's his report, and we have invited him as a guest. So obviously he would take that into consideration himself. I personally don't see an issue with it. He's speaking around facts and historical issues. I don't think he has a political agenda. But Chair, my question is just in terms of whether we can request SANParks to respond after this, because I think there are a lot of very important issues that have been raised, and I think we should give them the opportunity to respond to some of those issues if possible, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Brian. Honorable Mbata.
Thank you, Chair. I think I will agree with what Honorable Lamini has said, because also on the pictures, I saw the picture of one of the leaders in Mpumalanga. Unless there's a proof that that's what happened. But for now, because there's no evidence or there's no criminal charges, let's not try to implicate members who haven't been trialed. So I will agree with what Honorable Lamini, Mandla Lamini is saying. Thank you.
Ms. Yago, what is that end for?
Chair, if you wanted us to say something, it was just in case you wanted us, we'll wait for your ruling.
Okay, no, that's fine.
are part of the agenda items, you will get an opportunity to respond. We just need to make a ruling on this matter. Honourable members, remember we invited Mr. Rademeier to come and make a presentation to us. Now this is his report, and we did not give him his guidelines. We did not give him guidelines on what to encapsulate in the report. Now, if he makes allegations, because this meeting is a public meeting, and if Mr. Rademeier, if there are people who feel Mr. Rademeier must be sued for defamation of character or anything of that sort, that can be done. Those people can pursue Mr. Rademeier. But this is his finding. Whether they are substantive or not, it is not for us to make that determination. So that is the ruling. We accept this report as it is, and it is a matter of public scrutiny. If it's a matter that Mr. Rademeier needs to clarify with the people that he thinks are implicated, it's a matter that can be pursued outside the jurisdiction and scope of this particular meeting. With regards to Sandpark, if there are issues that you feel you want to respond to, at the right time, when we give you an opportunity to make a presentation, you will speak to how far the issues Mr. Rademeier is raising are correct or incorrect at the right time. So that is how we move. Mr. Rademeier, you want to take a last bite?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. No, just to say thank you very much for inviting me today, and my appreciation to the Honourable Members.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Rademeier, for making time to engage with the Portfolio Committee. Now, am I still in the meeting?
Yes, you are, Chair.
Oh, okay. All right. Can we move to the next item? Chilis?
Yes, Chair, the report.
The report of North of Scrap. Can you please slide it?
Sure.
Honourable members, this is the report on Norfolk Scrawl. I'm sure you would recall that we had taken a decision to hand over this matter because the department that we are tasked to provide oversight on has ended over because its role is no longer there in Norfolk Scrawl. But we had made a commitment to that the leadership of Norfolk Scrawl, that we are not going to just let them down and leave this matter unattended. That's the report. I'm not too sure if I know Honorable Paulson had already made an input, but I want us to go page by page. Honourable Brian.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Sorry, I think we just lost you for a second there. Chairperson, something I would like to potentially add with regards to the final engagement we had in March. I don't know if we can scroll down to that. That was the 7th of March engagement. the final briefing. I think, Chair, if you can just go further down. Down. Okay, so let me say So we said that there. Thereafter, the committee deliberates to ask clarifying questions. You responded to written. I think it is important for us to mention there, Chairperson, that some of the responses that were received, because it says there they were duly responded to by the members. The response received from the Human Rights Commission was woefully inadequate, and this was pointed out by all committee members at the time. And I think it's important for us to note that. That was also mentioned by yourself, I remember, during that meeting, and I think it's included in PMG if we look it up. I don't think that it's a true reflection to state that the feedback that we received in that meeting was adequate and duly responded to. The Human Rights Commission report in particular was mentioned by members, I think all members, to be inadequate and incoherent. And I think it's important for us to include that, Chair.
I agree, Honourable Bryant. I agree wholeheartedly. Can you please go a bit up on page 8? No, down. Where Honourable Bryant was making reflections. Yeah, thereafter. There. Up a bit. The second paragraph from the bottom. Thereafter, yes. The committee deliberated and asked clarifying questions which were duly responded to by the task team members. However, from the reports that were provided by the task team, it transpired that the portfolio community of forestry fisheries and has no further oversight role in crab or matter.
Yes,
right.
I would then suggest that after the first sentence, after task team members, full stop, we say concerns were raised in terms of the inadequate responses and feedback from the Human Rights Commission, something along those lines. Concerns were raised by members of the Portfolio Committee in terms of the inadequate responses and presentation made by the Human Rights Committee.
Concerns were raised on the incoherence
were raised by committee members.
Okay.
Concerns were raised by committee members on the incoherence and inadequate presentation and responses. Responses by the Human Rights Commission. Thanks, Chair.
Is it safe to make a recommendation in the same line that whoever was going to read this report must not misconstrue us? They must know that we were not happy with the responses by the Human Rights Commission, and therefore somebody must look into that. Or do we have a section at the bottom?
Chair, I think that would be a very adequate recommendation, but up to you where you'd like to put it. I wouldn't have any objections there.
You got it, Chilis? The committee, after that sentence, the committee, there where you put however, the committee therefore recommends.
Shall we not put it as the last bullet somewhere here, Chair?
It's fine, even if you can put it there as a recommendation.
Yeah. Okay, the committee Mr. Bryant.
The committee recommends that a comprehensive report be demanded from the South African Human Rights Commission. In relation to the matter of trouble.
The time frame there, Chair?
Well, it doesn't really matter. Whoever's going to read this report must look into this matter as a matter of vision. Perhaps you can put that on the matter of Krabo is a matter of agents. Okay, so you remove A, human rights. The committee recommends that a comprehensive report be demanded from the South African, yes. You covered, Honorable Brian?
Yes, Chairperson, covered. Thank you.
Okay, can we then get the mover for the adoption of the report with all the amendments that have been made?
I move, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Brian. Honorable Winkler?
I second that, Chair.
Honorable Bolton, are you still in a meeting?
Yes, sir.
You'd remember that Honorable Bolton had raised a view I think he had said something along the line that before we adopt the report, he must be mentioned, something like that. That other members argued that the homeless and landless people in the Western Cape and South Africa should find land anywhere and occupy it. They said that police must keep law and order and prevent evictions. And he said that it wasn't other members, it was the EFF, and that it must be put on record. Honorable Mkunu?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On this one of the Honorable Paulson, I think when we go through the report, it just indicates that Honorable committee members' views were these, because we were here as a portfolio committee. So there is nothing that, like, we are going to put an EFF, as this says. We are not yet on election. We are not yet campaigning. Let's leave the report like this and move on, Comrade Chair. I agree we adopt it as it is. Not include what Honorable Paulson was mentioning. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kunu, Honorable Kanjo, followed by Honorable Lyons and Honorable Weber.
Thank you, Chair. I will have to agree with you, Honorable Mtono. If you can go through our reports or minutes and whatsoever, we have never mentioned any political party. Hence, we are not even allowed to wear things with the political party logo in the portfolio committee meeting. So I think it will be new if you can start by doing that, and that we should not allow. Chairperson, let us adopt the report as it is. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kancho. Honorable Brian?
Thanks, Chairperson. Can I just ask quickly, I did propose the adoption, but if possible, can we just go to that section just so we can make sure that we are on that page? Because I know Honourable Paulson wanted to make a point of saying that his political party was in favour of land invasions. extreme that other members of the committee feel the same way, because I think it was quite clearly stipulated that other members didn't. Which was the section that he was referring to?
There is a section that says other members argued.
I'm just trying to find it.
The third sentence under 221.
Other members argued that, so it wasn't actually other members, it was only one member. So maybe a way to say it is to say that one member argued that a homeless and landless people, that way you don't have to mention the political party, but I don't think there was any more than one member that argued that people should find land anywhere and occupy it.
Yeah, well, let us not be found discussing semantics, Honorable Weber.
Chairperson, I fully agree with Honourable Bryant. I'm not sure if it will be incorrect to say Honourable Nazir Paulson argued that homeless and landless people will do it, because then you cover it everywhere. But I do think we need to avoid the thing that it's a lot of members in the committee, as it was only one member. So I do think that needs to be clear. So whether you say one member or whether you say Honourable Nazir Paulson argued the following, but I do think other members should be taken out. Thank you.
Noted. Honorable Mbata. Honorable Mbata.
Thank you, Chair. I think I would say I don't see any problem with the I don't think it's a sentence, it's like a semi-paragraph. I don't see any problem, because we don't mention any political party. Since I've been here 2019, I've never seen a political party being mentioned. So we are not campaigning here. There's nothing wrong. We leave it as it is. Thank you, Chair.
Let's make a ruling, Honorable Members. Let's leave it as it is. There's no way there's no need to mention any member, whether they are three or four. Because once we adopt this report, it becomes a report of all of us. So there's no way we say Honorable Brian said that, Honorable Mudise said that. So this is our report, all of us. Now that the report has been adopted, it becomes a product of all of us, and all of us take ownership of the contents of this report. So that is how we resolve. Colleagues, can we then move to the next item, because Honorable Brian has moved for the adoption and Honorable Winkler is seconded.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes, Honorable.
Sorry, I raised my hand again. I'm not sure if Dave wants to go before me. I might say what you want to say. So, Dave, if you want to say something before me, I want to step on your toes.
No, I think you must step on his toes.
Okay.
Please proceed to
another person. All right. Chair, then, I then don't adopt that, because it. I would suggest that then you say a member do that, because it is not the committee that said that. It was a person. And I agree with Honorable Mbata, but I don't want this to come back and say, but the committee actually argued that, because it was not the committee that argued it. And you just stated now that once this is approved, then this is a committee report, and it's not a committee that actually said that. And although it is, I think it's a dangerous statement that is standing there, and then I will ask that I will refrain then from the adoption of this report if that is not changed to a member. Thank you.
Honorable Brian, do you want to come back?
Yes, Chair, and I don't want to seem like I'm being a roadblock here, but it is semantics, but it's important because it's not a true reflection. It states members, and there weren't other members who were advocating for random land occupations to take place. They weren't, I know. Honourable Singh, for instance, is not present on the meeting today, but you know, I wouldn't want anybody to infer that perhaps he was in favour of it or anybody else, you know. So and Honourable Paulson has specifically asked that his name be mentioned, or not his name, but if we're not prepared to have his name mentioned, but you know, to identify himself as being the member who was opposed to that. So what I will do, unfortunately, Chair, is I'm not going to be able to accept it from my side, and if that is the ruling of the committee, so be it, then we just have to get somebody else to propose it. But it's not my understanding that that's a true reflection of what was passed in the meeting, because it was only one member. It wasn't members who were in favour of land occupations, wholesale random land occupations. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Okay, can you flight that sentence? I see a whole lot of other hands. Please flight that sentence again, Chilis. Okay, can we put on one member there?
Great, Chair. Oui.
And we must be careful, honourable members, that in future we might need to quote each other verbatim. Who said what? Who said what? But that's fine. I think I get the sense. One member. Put it one member, not a member. Does it read better?
100%. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, okay. So all those hands, I suspect they are now covered. Honorable Ganjo?
No, I'm covered, Chair. Thank you so much.
Honorable Ntunu?
I'm covered.
Okay. Do we stick through, do we have to adopt it again, or do you stand by your adoption, Honourable Brian?
Yes, Chair, if need be, I propose adoption as amended.
As amended, Honourable Brian adopts. Can we get a seconder? Honourable Winkler, you are the known culprit.
Yes, adopted as amended. Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay, thank you very much. Can we then move to the next item? Briefing on the APP and strategic plan for 2023-2024.
Yes.
I see the minister is now here.
And the deputy
minister is
here.
I invite you, Minister, to give an overview.
Greetings, Chairperson, and greetings to all honourable members, and greetings to the Deputy Minister. Chairperson, I'm on my phone because I have load shedding, so I'm not able to put my camera on. We had agreed with Deputy Minister that she will do the introduction. So I just want honourable members to know that I am here and I am listening. But let me hand over to her to do the introduction.
Thank you very much and welcome, Minister. We have received your apology that you joined the committee at 11 due to other commitments. Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks also to honorable members, and greetings to the field team or family and its leadership from the entities. When I saw Minister on the platform, I nearly left the screen and do something else. I'm happy that for 10 minutes, I'm happy that she's back, although we are all faced with the same challenge of the load sharing. Chairperson and the team, or and the members of parliament, on the platform we are joined by our GP, DG Nomfundo Tshabalala, and all the DGs that you have mentioned, Chairperson, this morning, of which I just want to indicate to yourself that that huge number of DGs, 8 of them are women, and I'm sure that the kind of presentation that they will take us through are the ones that they usually do each time that they are summoned to the portfolio committee. Today, Chairperson, will then take you through the department's APP and strategy plans for 2023-24 financial year, as you have mentioned. DG Nomfundo Tshabalala is going to then lead us in this area, so that we can quickly then deal with this area progress, so that the agenda is for 3 days and it's very long. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Without any waste of time, I then hand over to DG Nomfundo Tshabalala to take us through. Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to members.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. DG, over to you.
Thank you, Minister and Deputy Minister. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to the members. As already highlighted by the Deputy Minister, I am going to take the committee through the APP of the department at a high level in terms of the process that we have engaged in as a department in order to finalize this APP. And after that, we are then going to briefly take the committee through the individual programs. We have 9 programs in the department, key indicators that are in the APP, together with the targets that we have put through as part of our APP. Chairperson and members, just to highlight and take the committee through the process, and I'm not quite sure, Chair, whether Secretariat is going to flag the presentation, but I wanted to just briefly outline the process that we have gone through as a department, also to an extent of how we have engaged with key departments like your DPME, and also the involvement of the Auditor General's Office. The process did commence in September, where we had a session as the whole department, working very closely with the Deputy Minister and the Minister, and we had the first draft of our APP. One of the critical aspects which also were emphasized in this APP is that this is the last year of the current administration, and we then are going to be concluding the commitments that were made by this administration since 2019. The first draft was approved by Minister and was then sent to DPME in October, end of October. DPME provided comments as a way of ensuring that we are indeed aligned, firstly, to the vision, and also the vision of the country in terms of the NDP, and also the priorities of the current administration. That feedback from DPME was received by the department, which then informed a session which we had in January. beginning of this year, 2023, to then work out the second draft with the senior management of the department, which also involves the deputy minister and the minister. We then proactively requested the AGSA to also then do a review on this, of which they did, do a review, and they provide us with their, because this is not necessarily an audit on their side, they call it as a value-add review, which then assists departments to ensure that before we finalize our APT, they would have also given us comments. So they gave us those comments. We had about three findings of three comments that we then had to go back and review our APP on. Firstly, the one was around departmental APP and the extent at which it aligns to the framework of the sector performance APP. So we had to ensure, because that alignment was not necessarily coming out very clear, we then had to ensure that that alignment is there. And they made various comments around certain indicators that were not necessarily smart, and we then had to review our APP to ensure that we are putting forward key indicators and targets that are indeed smart.
There was also another aspect where they raised an issue on certain information that was required, where in the sector, in the framework for sector APP, it does not necessarily touch on what the department does, but the sector includes other national departments, provinces, and even management authority. So they had raised an issue to say, why is this not appearing in on our APP? We then had to provide them with information to clarify that where we are contributing to the sector, that information is in the APP. However, there is a role that we play in terms of coordinating the whole sector. And we then pull through the IGR structures, we do involve national departments like the Department of Water and Sanitation, and also provinces and also management authorities. So we have provided them with information to clarify our role in as far as that is concerned. So those are the issues. I just thought, Honorable Chair and members, I need to highlight their involvement, even though I think in the beginning of the meeting it was highlighted that they are not necessarily in this meeting, but they were they had been involved in terms of then a value-add review that they did on the APP. Now, coming to this APP, can I request that we put it on slideshow? The presentation will cover the purpose, the background, and our mandate and strategic focus. And those three areas I think I'm going to briefly go through. And it also covers the alignment of our APP to government priorities from 2019 in terms of the MTSF 2019 to 2024. We will take through the committee also through the budget and human resource information, which is very key in terms of ensuring that we are properly resourced both financially.
question relates to the revision of the National Biodiversity Economy Strategy, which we aim to submit to Cabinet for approval and publish for public comment. Next slide relating to the outcome on improved access, fair and equitable benefit, equitable sharing of benefits. The output indicator relates to the number of biodiversity economy initiatives implemented, and the annual target on that we will be implementing three initiatives. The first one is the creation of 800 jobs, jobs opportunities, and then the training of 400 beneficiaries. And this is largely accredited training and the donation of 5,000 heads of game to previously disadvantaged individuals and communities. And the next one relates to the number of benefit sharing agreements approved, and we intend to get 5 benefit sharing agreements approved. Then the last outcome relating to indigenous forests sustainably managed and regulated. This is the new directorate that has been moved to the branch. We intend to, the output indicator relates to the number of state indigenous forest management units mapped, and that is about 5 of them. And then also the clearing of invasive alien species in respect of the number of hectares to be rehabilitated, and the target there is 300. Thank you very much, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Let me apologize. Dr. Fikizolo is not in, but the acting DDG is in the meeting. However, Dr. Naidu has challenges with connectivity. So I'm not quite sure whether we can then go back to program 3 and see whether he can present. He is in the meeting. Hopefully connectivity is fine. But if it's not fine, I will take the committee through that program.
The camera off. My apologies. I did start presenting earlier, but it seemed no one could hear me or see me, so let me leave the camera off. Thank you. Program 3, Oceans and Coasts. The major outcome of the program would be to look at threats to environmental integrity, manage those, and ecosystem conserve. We have 10 targets, as DG mentioned. Next slide, please. First target would be to look at water quality in the 4 coastal provinces, and this will continue what we started in the last 4 years, to look at priority areas and to monitor and to produce a water quality report for 40 priority areas in the coastal provinces. The next target would be to do the first marine spatial plan, now that the Act has passed a few years ago. And to do this, the first area targeted will be the West Coast area. Earlier this year, the sector plans, that is the major industries in the ocean, their departments published their sector plans or ambitions of how they would like to use the ocean. Based on that, the first sub-regional plan will be developed. Continuing with our annual production of marine protected area plans, a further 2 plans will be developed in the next financial year for the Southeast Atlantic seamounts and the Southwestern Indian Ocean seamounts. These are mountainous areas in the ocean. The area is very rich in biodiversity, and most of them are in, we seek to provide most of them with some protection because of their biodiversity levels. Within this year, within the last 2 years, we published for comment twice the Penguin Biodiversity Management Plan. And at the moment, we've revised that based on comments that we got last year, and we hope to finalize that. Parallel to this is the international panel that's looking at fisheries interactions and penguins and possibility of closed areas, and any outcome of that will be incorporated into this next iteration of the Penguin Biodiversity Management Plan. For estuarine management, the 4 major estuaries that the department itself at national level will be looking at providing ongoing monitoring reports of the Buffalo, Durban, Richards Bay, and the Orange River. The next target is to develop amendments to the Stockton Cities Act. The current Stockton Cities Act was done in 1996, and it needs an update, especially that in the last 4 years, we published the Antarctic Strategy, and in this year we hope to align the Antarctic Cities Act with outcomes of the strategy. Next slide, please. Then, with marine protected areas, to expand the area under protection. Over the last 2 or 3 years, we've engaged with academics, scientists from other national organizations and provinces, and develop candidate areas for to expand the protected areas. And we're looking to finalize these and then present these as candidate areas for the next step or the expanding the current set of marine protected areas. The number of scientific publications, the department is the only department that runs, that operates offshore research vessels. And so we do provide an opportunity for both internal scientists, but also for academics from universities and other national agencies. And then we hope to produce 20 annually, peer-reviewed publications from the monitoring and science projects that we have. The ongoing relief voyages of the SA Agalas II, these have to be done because we have to change out the personnel at the three bases, the base in Antarctica, Cop Island, and Marion, but also undertake the science projects and programs that we do while we're doing the relief voyages. That has to continue annually. And then the last target is for us to produce the annual science report card. And what is the relationship between the annual science report card and the research publications? Generally, we have many stakeholders who want the last data point. So every year we count many of the seabird species, the seals. We do a whale estimate. We also measure currents. We look at plankton assemblages around the ocean areas adjacent to South Africa mainland. And these take 1 to 3 years to get into a peer-reviewed publication, but annually we produce the last data point. So if stakeholders are interested in having the most up-to-date information, they look at the annual science report card, which we put out at the end of every financial year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The next is Program 6, which is Environmental Programs. And the DDG there is going to take the committee through the key indicators. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Good afternoon, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, DG and colleagues. The purpose of Program 6 is implementing the expanded public works programs and green economy projects in the environment sector. Next slide, please. The branch has 4 outcomes, and the first outcome aligns with priority 2 on economic transformation and job creation, which the DG spoke to when she made her earlier inputs. So within this outcome of decent jobs created, sustained with youth, women, and persons with disabilities as priorities, we aim to create a number of full-time equivalents for the year is 35,477, and we will thereafter, in this regard, create 71,035 work opportunities. And in creating these work opportunities and the associated full-time equivalents, Chair, we will also then, in line with the outcome, prioritize opportunities for women, opportunities for youth, and also opportunities for people living with disabilities. The second outcome that we contribute to is ecosystems rehabilitated and managed. In this regard, and also in line with the priorities relating to conservation, the branch will ensure that we are able to clear 70,066 hectares infested with invasive alien plants, and also clear 732,900 hectares of follow-up clearing were in areas wherein we've previously done the work clearing invasive alien plants. When it comes to wetlands under rehabilitation, we intend to rehabilitate 115 wetlands in the current financial year and also maintain our activities relating to cleaning coastline, the 2,116 kilometers of coastline cleaned. On outcome, three, which is related to integrated farm management, we will endeavor to make sure that
we suppressed 90% of fires, and also in the last outcome on infrastructure adaptation and disaster risk reduction, we will, in that regard, we will create 23 infrastructure, with 10 being constructed and 13 being renovated. And when it comes to overnight visitor and staff accommodation units, we will construct 10 and also then renovate 11. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Our next program is Program 7, and the DDG will take you through the indicators. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Good morning to Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister and colleagues. In terms of Program 7, our mandate focuses on protection of the environment from the negative impacts associated with chemicals and waste through ensuring that there are legislative and other measures, authorizations, directives and agreements. Moving on to the next slide, the first outcome that Program 7 focuses on is with regard to the mitigation of threats that threaten environmental quality and human health. The first indicator focuses on mercury, which is a heavy metal that also has an impact on environment. We are planning to finalize the mercury regulations. We had in the past financial year initiated consultations. The next indicator focuses on the chemicals, reducing hydrofluorocarbons, which are mainly refrigerants, and these chemicals are used also in air conditioners. They have an impact on the ozone layer, so our target is to reduce the consumption by 50%, which is about 2,570 tons. The next indicator focuses on waste. It has to do with regulatory instruments that we have introduced, covering the policy on extended producer responsibility. The year that ended in March, we have published for implementation EPR schemes for three products, portable batteries, oils and pesticides. In this current year, we are planning to finalize registration and work with the National Treasury to approve the EPR fees for the, for these three products. Also, focusing on waste diversion, we have three other waste streams that are currently under EPR implementation, that is paper and packaging, electrical and electronic waste, and lighting waste. And for the coming, this current year, we will be increasing the tonnages that are diverted. The first year of implementation was 2022, and this year is 2023, a new target taken forward. Also on waste diversion, we also have a priority waste stream, waste tires. We are also planning to increase the number of tonnages of waste tires that are diverted through recycling as well as energy recovery. Given that we have the Waste Management Bureau implementing the waste tire operations in this year, we are also planning to publish for implementation the Section 29 Tire Industry Waste Management Plan on tires that would enable the management of waste tires. The next outcome that Program 7 focuses on is on support to local government with regard to the waste management function. We will be supporting the training of municipal councillors as well as officials on waste management, and we will also be the cleaning campaigns in municipalities, also ensuring that their landfill size and refuse collection is also
support it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chair. Program 8 is our next program. DDG, over to you.
DG, good morning to the honourable members. Honourable Chair, Deputy Minister and Minister. Can I continue, Chair?
Yes, I'm sorry. Please proceed, DG.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. The purpose of the branch is to develop and facilitate the implementation of policies and targeted programs to ensure sustainable management of forests. In the next slide. In doing this, what we will focus on are two main outcomes. The first outcome will deal with the sustainable production of state forests, where we're trying to ensure that our plantations are better managed. Through this, we will then ensure that the number of hectares that are brought back through planting the temporarily unplanted areas would be 1,800 hectares. And then linked to that would be the number of hectares under silvicultural practices, whereby we make sure that whatever has been planted is maintained to ensure that there is better production in the plantations, and the target there is 2,100 hectares. And then in terms of the nurseries that are to be refurbished, we are targeting 3. These will then assist us also in terms of contribution towards the greening program, which is on the next outcome. And then as part of our master plan implementation, we had indicated that the department would move away from direct management of the plantations, and we are targeting that we will then transfer 8 of these plantations to the communities. And then the second outcome deals with the threats on environmental quality and human health being mitigated. That is where we'll then implement our greening program, where we are looking at the number of trees that we want to plant outside the forest footprint, which will be 150,000 trees. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. I think the presentation yes. I think the next program is Program 9, Fisheries Management. We are going to then cover this as part of the MLRF. The DDG, who is then the responsible for the MLRF, will cover both Program 9 and the MLRF as part of the MLRF presentation. But before she then covers the MLRF, I also want to highlight, Chair and members, that we have also in the presentation, though we are not going to go into the details, we have indicated how the strat plan had been revised. And this has been retabled as an annexure to the 2023-24 APP. And the main revisions of the strat plan was to ensure that we consistently still aligned, firstly, to the priorities, but also government planning cycle. And that is where then we had to have the year for 2024-25 to then ensure that in terms of the MTEF, it is informing a 3-year rolling plan of the MTEF. And also I think the other aspect which I've already alluded to is that the indicators, the main focus has been on the strategic indicators as opposed to the operational indicators, whereby we have now come down to about less beginning of the strat plan. So the strat plan basically does not change much. Those are just the only amendments that we did. And these revisions were actually in line with the DPME guideline in terms of then continuous reporting on the strategic plan. So that's what I would like to highlight, Chair. And with your permission, we request that we then go through the MLRF and the DDG for Program 9 is going to cover Program 9, including the MLRF indicators and targets. Over to you, DDG. So thanks, Chair.
Good morning, or good afternoon, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, Honourable DM, and colleagues, colleagues from the entities. I'm going to be, as the DG said, we operate both as Program 9 under the department, as well as we operate the Marine Living Resources Fund. And the Marine Living Resources Fund is a Schedule 3A public entity which finances the operations of the fisheries branch, but our salaries are paid by the National Department. And the mandate and the purpose of the fisheries branch is to manage the development and monitoring and sustainable uses of marine living resources and to protect the integrity and quality of the marine ecosystems and to ensure the growth of the aquaculture sector. If we can go to slide 3, which details the targets for the 23-24 financial year. As I've said, most of there's a similarity between Program 9 and the Marine Living Resources Fund, with the exception of three additional targets that are included under the MLRF, and I'll highlight those when we get to them. So the first target is to submit the Aquaculture Development Bill to Parliament in this coming financial year. We also will be implementing 100% of the action plan for the National Freshwater Inland Wild Capture Fishery. In terms of a well-managed and regulated fisheries and aquaculture sector, we will be conducting 5,500 inspections in 6 key priority fisheries, focusing on 6 key priority fisheries, but not only. We will be servicing all 22 fishing sectors, but the 6 priority fisheries are hake, abalone, rock lobster, lionfish, squid, and pelagics. We will be conducting 290 verifications in the 6 priority fisheries. We will be doing 40 joint operations with partners. Now, this is one of the targets that is under the MLRF and doesn't appear under Program 9. And this is 40 joint operations with enforcement partners, including Operation Pakisa. We will also be delivering 4 key deliverables in the National Plan of Action on Sharks. If you can go to the next slide. This year, we will also develop a draft National West Coast Rock Lobster Strategy. We have an anti-poaching strategy, and we now need to turn that into a broader strategy for lobster. We will be allocating small-scale fishing rights to small-scale cooperatives in the Western Cape, concluding that process. And we will roll out 100% of the Integrated Development Support Program to small-scale fishing cooperatives in the 4 coastal provinces. And then the last 2 are MLRF-specific targets dealing with the Working for Fisheries Program. And under the Working for Fisheries Program, we will be creating 900 full-time equivalents and 1,500 job opportunities. And then if I can just ask you to skip, we'll skip the risk plan and go to that slide. I won't go through it in detail, but that just outlines the budget that is allocated per program from administration, marine resource management, aquaculture and economic development, fisheries research and development, and monitoring control and compliance, and the budget allocation there for this financial year across all the programs is 472 million rand. Chair, with your permission, I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chavasan. In the presentation that we tabled, we also have gone through the details of the 9.8 billion budget. I just wanted to indicate that the details are as per the slide 51, where it is then demonstrating on how the department is resourced over the MTF up to 25-26, and obviously the outer years are indicative informed by the year one. It also provides detail in the next slide in terms of how then, in terms of economic classification, how then the 9.8 billion is categorized in terms of the current expenditure, which is mainly compensation of employees, your goods and services, interest and rent on land, and also on transfers, where then we transfer to various either provinces, the entities of the departments and other agencies. And we also have payment for capital and the payment for financial assets, which in this case we do not have any item. So this is the economic classification in line with National Treasury guidelines. The next slide, I'm not going to go into details because respective public entities, as they present their APPs, will also talk to their overall budgets. But what we are highlighting here is how much from the department is going to be transferred to these various entities and what exactly are the components of these transfers earmarked for in the various entities. Also key is on the expanded public works program, where entities are very critical in the implementation of the expanded public works program. We've also highlighted how much each entity is going to be receiving in as far as that is concerned. And this therefore brings us to the end of the presentation of the department together with the Marine Living Resource Fund. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG and your team. Thank you very much. Honorable members, that is the presentation of the APP and the strategic plans of 2023-2024 and the MLRS. I invite you to engage this report. I note you, Honorable Winkler.
Honorable Chair, sorry.
Yeah, Minister.
Sorry, Chair. Can I just note that there's a delegation from the UAE representing COP28 that are arriving at my office now. Myself and the climate team are just going to step outside for a short meeting with them. So I'll request that if there are particular issues that honourable members would want my reflections on, I would obviously be in a position to do that when I step back in at 1:30. I also just wanted to check whether you're taking a lunch break.
Yeah, immediately after the responses, Honorable Minister, from the Department. department, we will take a lunch break. Maybe we should allow you and the climate team to meet that delegation, and we should probably break at exactly 1 o'clock, and then we'll come back at 1:30.
Thanks, Chairperson. Okay. I'll be back with you at 1:30. Thank you.
So we will just note if there are issues that you might need to respond to, we'll help you noting them.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Honorable Winkler, you'll be followed by Honorable Kancho, and then followed by Honorable Weber. In that order.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Department for the comprehensive reports. So I have a number of questions pertaining to the various programs. I know under the priority 5, I think, which deals with waste management, there was note made that 300 municipal councillors and officials would be trained. If they could just unpack exactly what the training entails and how this relates to waste management in the cities, because it is my understanding, especially in many municipalities that are really failing to, I think, perform in their core mandates, that waste management very often falls by the wayside. So what does this training entail? Is it also, besides training, is there going to be resource capacitation? For example, are they going to be provided with resources for separation at source? Are they going to be trained on how to interact with the informal sector and the waste pick sector when it comes to waste management? So just to unpack that a bit more. Then with regards to Priority 7, and this falls under the Climate and Air Quality Program, with regard to the just transition, there was mention made of, you know, the oceans and coasts and other programs, but a huge component of the just transition regards the transitioning the energy sector in terms of the labor involved in coal and other fossil fuel production to renewables. So my question is, what sort of engagement has been had with the Department of Energy, with labor and trade and industry, because those departments are, of course, integral in ensuring the success of the just transition. And any program that the Department of Environmental Affairs embarks on is going to hinge on the collaboration of those departments and aligning, for example, the IRP with our targets in terms of the Paris Agreement. So just to unpack that and where that sort of cross-departmental collaboration sits at the moment. With regards to human resources, it was made mention of that there are 487 frozen posts and 291 vacant posts. Are there any particular departments where you find a concentration of these vacant posts and that impeding the work of the department? And are any of these in perhaps management positions or other key positions? And what is the department's plan to ensure that those vacancies are filled as a matter of urgency? With regard to environmental compliance, I see that from all the programs, funding is, I think, least allocated to compliance, but a major responsibility or mandate of the Department of Environmental Affairs is, of course, ensuring that compliance is upheld, specifically with, you know, NEMA and NEMBA legislation. For example, we have an entire industry of captive bred lions. We have a lot of poaching happening in the fishery sector and also management of the fishery sector. And yet compliance is the biggest issue when it comes to those controversial issues. And yet there's, I think, a lack of funding going into that department. Is there a rationale behind this? And on what are we going to do to improve adherence to compliance across the various programs if compliance itself is not being given enough resources to fulfill its responsibilities? With regard to the NPA, there were 46 dockets apparently that have been handed over. How many are outstanding at the moment? Then Program 3, Oceans and Coasts. Water quality testing, I think it's a program that's being rolled out in 4 coastal provinces. Does this include KwaZulu-Natal, of course? And what is being done with regard to the Etekwini sewage crisis that is currently underway. In April, I think the April Easter period, one of our main beaches, Mshlanga Beach, was closed due to poor water quality and the very high E. coli levels. And I wonder, does this program take cognizance of priority areas like perhaps Etekwini, where there's an ongoing catastrophic sewage issue that is impacting the economy of the city, and it's also destroying the natural heritage of the city? And what exactly is the plan, and how does this water quality program interface perhaps with that? Give me a second, sorry. Yes, in terms of chemicals and waste, so again, there was mention of 300 councillors and officials being trained, but are there going to be sustainable plans put into place that are going to capacitate municipalities to take waste management effectively forward, as opposed to just small interventions? And is there going to be, I think, regular check-in and capacity building in municipalities? Also, what was not made mention of is that there's a huge issue where we have individuals living in massive informal settlements that do not have an adequate means of disposing of their waste. And this is a huge indictment, I think, on these municipalities, because these people are living in areas where they don't know how to dispose of their rubbish, and they have to live with the waste, and often the waste finds itself going into water courses like rivers, where those same individuals have to use that water for cooking and living. And so I think that what is really needed is an emergency sort of priority plan on how waste specifically in informal settlements is going to be managed going forward. And that also then will speak to, you know, the conservation and environmental protection at the same time. In terms of Program 8 and forestry management, we speak about greening programs and the planting of 150,000 trees. I wonder how forestry management also interacts with the goals and objectives of the climate program, you know, because forests form carbon sinks. And I wonder if there's any interaction with that, and if under the forestry management program there is a climate sort of division to that. Yes, that's everything from me so far. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Winkler. Honorable Ganjo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me appreciate the report. Chair, I have only three questions because some of the questions have been covered by Honorable Winkler. Program 4, Chair, they've mentioned the international donors to support South Africa. I just want them to tell us the specific programs that will be supported by these resources. It's quite a good initiative, but we want them to be specific or in terms of the programs that will be supported. And Program 5, Biodiversity Economy Initiative or Program, and also just want to check how are they going to increase the capacity and the participation of previously disadvantaged individuals and communities and in this program, and also what strategies that will be employed to ensure that this to ensure the sustainability of this program. And lastly, Chair, under human resources, they've mentioned of 291 vacant posts, and if they can also give us time frames and when